This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. We've heard a series of stories recently about a community in West Virginia where residents are concerned about toxic waste they say is causing high rates of cancer. Many residents there say they want the Environmental Protection Agency to put their town on the Superfund Program's National Priorities List, or NPL. But resources for the federal government have been dwindling for decades. What does it mean when a community is placed on the NPL? Do contaminated areas get cleaned up? Brittany Patterson visited one site in north central West Virginia to learn more.
On a recent drive through the Northview neighborhood of Clarksburg, James LaChapelle surveys what is left of the factory that was once the lifeblood of this blue-collar community.
See, if you look down the road, you can see how much of the factory has collapsed. See where the trees are and everything? That's all caved in.
Broken windows dot the dilapidated structure, which was once the Roland Glass factory. Luscious green vines and trees almost obscure the piles of tires and other refuse. LaChapelle has lived here his entire life. His grandfather, father, and brother all worked at the glass factory, which closed its doors in the 1970s.
I grew up with that factory there and never had one worry about it. I mean, we just grew up, okay, that's just the way it was. But as you got older and the factory collapsed, then you started worrying, when are they going to clean this mess up?
2 years ago, the Environmental Protection Agency said it was going to take over cleanup of the site through its Superfund program after concerns surfaced that a nearby rail trail might be contaminated with lead, zinc, and arsenic from the factories and leaching into the North Fork River. LaChapelle was excited, but at a community meeting hosted by the EPA in 2016, officials outlined a timeline that tapered the 68-year-old's expectations.
EPA, I'd love you to death. I'm glad you're looking, but 25 years, it's just a mite long.
Even though it may take a long time to clean up this site, Clarksburg's assistant city manager, Anthony Bellotti, says he's hopeful.
In 2016, we became fortunate and we were listed on the national priorities list.
Bellotti doesn't use the term fortunate lightly. He says if the site had not been added to the Superfund program's national priorities list, the city may have been on the hook to clean up the contamination.
We do feel very fortunate, and this will ultimately end up with some cleanup. And as a result of the cleanup, it all goes towards future economic development.
With the help of another federal cleanup program run by the EPA, the Brownfields Program, Clarksburg has cleaned up a different glass factory, as well as two other contaminated sites. But Superfund is different. It deals with the most toxic sites in the country. The law tasks EPA with determining how contaminated a site is and then making a plan to clean it up. Sometimes that can mean working with the site's owner or responsible party to do a cleanup. Other times, EPA pays for it themselves. There are 243 Superfund sites on the NPL across Appalachia. 10, including the one in Clarksburg, are located in West Virginia. Many communities, including Clarksburg and the town of Minden in Fayette County, advocate to be included on the national priorities list, hoping their inclusion will come with significant federal resources. But getting a spot on the NPL does not mean that help will come quickly.
That may take months to years to actually have any action taken on the NPL.
John Hando worked for the West Virginia DEP for 20 years as a hazardous waste inspector, which brought him in close contact with many of the state's Superfund sites. He says early on, Superfund was successful in West Virginia.
In the early 80s, well, late 80s, you had across the state of West Virginia lots of sites that the state knew about and, of course, the US EPA knew about. So you had actions taken on the ordnance works here in Morgantown. You had what was called the Leetown pesticide site out in the eastern panhandle.
But as time has gone on, federal resources have shrunk. Superfund gets its money from two pots, congressional appropriations, and until about two decades ago, a tax on petroleum and chemical industries. Both sources are dwindling. In an interview, EPA Superfund site coordinator Melissa Linden said the agency did not feel declining funding affected its ability to run the program.
I don't see that it would decrease our ability to take action.
But former EPA officials tell a different story.
it takes you longer to do the assessment of what the cleanup is going to require.
Christine Todd Whitman ran the EPA for 3 years under the Bush administration. She says the lapsed source of funding is affecting nearly every aspect of EPA's ability to pursue new cleanups and advance ones that are already on the NPL. The average time it takes to complete a cleanup under Superfund has lengthened. From 1986 to 1989, projects were finished, on average, about 4 years after a site was placed on the NPL. By 1996, the average time was nearly 11 years, according to the Government Accountability Office. The current head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, has said removing sites from Superfund is a priority for the administration. But in its first budget request to Congress, the White House proposed slashing Superfund's budget by about 25%. Matthew Stanislaus ran the Superfund program under the Obama administration. He says less resources for Superfund ultimately harms the communities that live near them.
Every dollar taken away from that program means compromising public health, increasing the risk of disease, as well as delaying economic recovery and job recovery for communities that need it the most.
The EPA estimates approximately 53 million people live within 3 miles of a Superfund site. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
You can hear more about Superfund sites across West Virginia on this week's episode of Inside Appalachia. Find it online at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:51. There's a chance of rain this morning in the south, becoming partly sunny today with gusty wind, highs in the 70s, partly cloudy skies overnight with lows in the 50s, partly cloudy Tuesday, a chance of rain in the north, with highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. The coal industry in Appalachia has suffered from disruptive competition, such as hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. Now, some students in the economically struggling coal fields hope to take part in another disruptive industry, drone aircraft. As part of the series Changing Course, Benny Becker explains how building and racing drones could help an aerospace industry take off.
All right, listen up. I need everybody's attention right here if you're going to be flying.
That's Paul Green of the Kentucky Valley Educational Cooperative, which is a partnership of school districts across eastern Kentucky.
Today's is our second annual drone race, and we've got about 20 schools that will be participating.
The Ohio Valley has a long history as a leader in aerospace engineering. Factories in eastern Kentucky produce parts for military and civilian aircraft, and local universities offer strong training programs. Nearby Morehead State University is known for tiny satellites that students design.
We talked to the professors there. Their comment was, well, we get a lot of really strong, academically focused kids. But when we get them in here, they have very minimal skills actually building. And he's like, we build satellites. So we decided to buy kits, all the parts to a drone, not a lot of instructions. And we said, here you go, have at it.
Kelsey Tackett's team from South Floyd Elementary is competing for the first time.
We were provided a grant and a starter kit, so we've had to solder and piece together and now practice driving so that we can compete in a race later today.
I'm Desiree Caudill in the eighth grade from South Floyd Elementary. At the beginning, I kind of felt as if more people had more experience than us, but as we were testing it with the other people, I kind of realized they were in the same boat as us, so that made me feel a lot better about it.
It's not really a race here, just who can get it around the course. Two people made it around the course last year, and he made it around smoother, so he got first place and I got second.
Would you mind just saying your names and where you're from?
Franklin Combs in Arcadian Central High School.
My name's Stone Fawn. I'm from Knott County Central High School. We're here for our second annual drone race.
Getting hands-on experience with this stuff where it's kind of
it's a new field. So
yeah, a new field coming into Kentucky.
We're able to put all of our skills we've learned to the test today. Hopefully, we'll come out on top.
Local leaders hope these students' skills will end up creating new jobs. Chris Ambergy is a Knott County official, one of many working to develop a local drone port, where companies can fly and test drones. Several local drone businesses have already been launched, and the drone port's training events have brought in visitors from across the country. The hope is that it'll become a hub for a growing drone industry.
That's going to bring jobs to our region, and you know, with the loss of coal jobs, we need all the jobs in our area that we can get.
Do you see a connection between the jobs that you're hoping that would bring and what's happening out here?
Absolutely. You know, this is the kids. This is the future. I think for once, rural Appalachia, we're ahead of the game, so to speak, on this. And I see this being the future of our area.
So we don't have an economy. There's just no jobs. We can't sustain ourselves around here. And so if this drone port does come in, then I might come back.
For me, if that drone port does come around, I most likely will come back, and hopefully that drone port will bring in bigger industries and they'll just kind of build up and keep people here.
Now, back to the drone racing. As you'll hear, the Floyd County team quickly hits a major snag, but we'll start at the beginning.
Up first, Jared Price from Owsley is number one.
My name's Jared Price. I'm in 11th grade and I'm from Owsley County. I asked my engineering teacher and my principal if we could start one up, and the next year they started a drone club up. You qualify for the next round if you make one complete lap around it, which I just did, so I qualified for the next round. I'll be in the military for about 6 years, but after I get out, I'm hoping I can get a job at the drone port, working with drones, programming, building them, and, you know, just have fun while you're working.
My name's Kansas Thumbo, 8th grade from Southwood Elementary.
And was your teacher saying this is something you might be interested in continuing with?
Yeah, it's very simple to do. It's just like melting metal, two wires.
We got it.
So you can see they
wouldn't do. I'm Haley Sloan. So the first time I flew, it went pretty good. And then, well, it shot up to the roof, hit the roof, came back down, and the battery bounced out of it, and it broke the strap.
It's kind of wonky, so we might have to go back and resolder that part before the race.
How's it going?
Horrible.
Horrible?
Yeah, we got another bad motor.
We tried different motors and still didn't work.
So
now we're not able to compete.
So how do y'all feel?
I think we're all pretty excited.
Would y'all still feel like it was a good experience? Or?
Yeah.
And do you think you'll take part in something like this next year?
Yeah, hope so.
Do you think you'll win next year?
Probably not.
I told them I think that us just being here is a really big step. We've never had anyone build drones or do robotics in our school until this year. So this year we happen to have a coding class and we had a drone club. So we're going in the right direction for STEM education.
3, 2, 1, go. And then in first place from Belfry High School is Seth Hatfield. Seth Hatfield.
I'm Seth Hatfield. I'm a junior at Belfry High School, and I came in first place today. I'm interested in aviation, and honestly, the future of aviation is turning more into drones, and I just feel like it's a good field to maybe look into for the future.
Is that in part because you think it would give an opportunity to be able to stay around here?
Yeah, I don't want to move away, and I want to stay here, see this area flourish.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Knott County, Kentucky.
Support for this story came from the Solutions Journalism Network and the Ohio Valley Resources, made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice has declared a state of emergency in 8 counties for flooding from heavy rains. The governor's office says in a news release that some emergency evacuations were underway Sunday following severe storms. The declaration is for Berkeley, Grant, Hampshire, Hardy, Jefferson, Mineral, Morgan, and Pendleton counties. It allows the use of state assets and directs the West Virginia State Police and the Army National Guard to help hard-hit areas. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.